This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Signs were missed. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka, on this Friday, December 3rd. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Officials are trying to figure out how they might have responded differently to threats prior to a deadly shooting this week at a Michigan high school.
The House and Senate have avoided a government shutdown by passing a funding measure that pays the bills till mid-February.
As expected, the Biden administration is imposing stricter rules for international travelers arriving in the U.S. over Omicron concerns.
And counterfeit COVID masks still being sold everywhere.
A big part of the problem is e-commerce platforms, but there's also sort of a regulatory vacuum here, and that is nobody is really regulating these imported masks. So it's kind of a wild west out there.
Andy Jacobs at the New York Times on Amazon leading consumers to vendors selling fake or poorly made masks from China. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill have given themselves more time to negotiate and pass a new set of funding bills. Both the House and Senate yesterday approved another short-term extension of government funding, this time through mid-February. It avoids a partial government shutdown that would have taken effect as of midnight tonight. Some Senate Republicans tried to block fast passage over the Biden administration's vaccine or test mandate. Mike Lee of Utah.
It's wrong. It's immoral. You don't tell someone that if they don't do exactly what you want them to do, that they're going to lose their job.
The emergency legislation was needed because Congress has not yet passed the 12 annual appropriations bills funding government activities for the fiscal year that began October 1st. The work isn't finished either. The federal government must also address its borrowing limit. Failure to extend it could trigger a default. There's also the Defense Authorization Bill and nearly $2 trillion in additional spending that Democrats favor. President Biden is tightening COVID-19 testing timelines for travelers entering the U.S. and extending a mask mandate on airplanes and other public transportation. It's part of a response to the emergence of the Omicron variant. Arriving international travelers will have to test within 24 hours of departure, regardless of vaccination status. That replaces the 72-hour rule for vaccinated travelers. The new testing rules will take effect this Monday. White House spokeswoman Jen Psaki.
The decision to put in place specific travel restrictions from a set of countries was made based on the recommendation of our health and medical team and based on the fact that there were hundreds, if not thousands, of cases that we were seeing in South Africa and concern about neighboring countries.
The Omicron variant has now been detected in at least five states after multiple states announced their first cases of the strain last evening. The administration will also require travelers to wear masks through mid-March on planes, buses, and trains, and at domestic transportation hubs like airports and indoor bus terminals. Law enforcement and school officials are examining what could have been done and can be done in the future to better assess and respond to threats like ones we're learning about now from the deadly shooting spree earlier this week at Oxford High School in Michigan. School Superintendent Tim Thorne spoke in a video.
There are no discipline records at the high school. Yes, this student did have contact with our front office. And yes, his parents were on campus November 30th.
On Monday, the day before, accused gunman Ethan Crumbly opened fire on his classmates, killing four and wounding seven. A teacher had reported that he engaged in concerning behavior in a classroom, prompting school officials to meet with him. That night, police say Mr. Crumbly, a 15-year-old 10th grader, created a video on his phone indicating a, quote, desire to shoot up a school the next day. Coming up next, how the Omicron variant could widen our economic divide. Dell Technologies' biggest business sale of the year has arrived. Step up your vision with top tech up to 50% off during their Cyber Monday event. Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business, plus get incredible savings on Windows 11 PCs along with servers, monitors, and docks, all with free shipping. There's also special financing with Dell Business Credit. Get started by contacting your Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Friday. COVID-19 has carved a partisan divide through the U.S. Democratic-leaning states may have avoided the worst of COVID illness thanks to restrictions, but the result was a lagging state economy. Insight from Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal. Greg, your findings.
Well, we've known that since the pandemic began, Democrats and Republicans have responded quite differently to COVID-19. Democrats in general have been more worried and more cautious. They've been more willing to restrict their own behavior, wear masks. They were faster to get vaccinations. And Democratic-leaning states have implemented policies that reflect those preferences. They've been more likely to close businesses and have extended lockdowns, keep children out of in-person teaching, and to promulgate mask and vaccine mandates. What's been the effect of this different approach by red and blue states? Well, there appear to be marginally lower infection and death rates among blue states, all else equal, but they've also experienced much weaker economic recoveries. If you look at job growth, for example, it's much weaker in blue states than red states. If you look at total job growth since February 2020, just before the pandemic began, the 10 strongest states all have Republican governors, and most of them were carried by former President Donald Trump in last fall's election. And almost the exact opposite is true of the 10 worst states with respect to job performance.
Jeez. All right. So I know there are a lot of factors that go into that. Explain, I guess, how they could impact those generalities.
Yeah, it's difficult to be definitive about any of these relationships. Both the economic and the health impact of COVID is extremely complex. Just to point one thing out, blue states were really hit hard early on. Specifically, I'm talking about the Northeast, New Jersey, New York, Connecticut, Massachusetts. These bore the brunt of the first wave when really, as a country, we were completely unprepared. We didn't have adequate testing capacity. We didn't have enough personal protective equipment. We had no therapies, much less vaccines. Hospitals were overwhelmed. So that clutch of states really suffered severe economic and health consequences at the start of the pandemic. And that was really almost had nothing to do with the political preferences of their populations. It's only in the subsequent months and years that you could see a more clear pattern. If you were to compare Texas and California, for example, which are demographically and geographically similar states, California has consistently had lower experience with infections and deaths in Texas and consistently weaker economic results. Other factors, of course, are going on, like some states have older people, some states have people who have more pre-existing conditions like obesity and diabetes. And as far as the economic results go, there's other stuff going on as well. North Dakota, for example, has very high exposure to oil and gas, and that cost it significantly in terms of economic output. And with Hawaii, that was the case with tourism as well. So you can, the points that I'm trying to make are really general points. There are exceptions to all these relationships reflecting the specific circumstances that each state experienced.
We're speaking with Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal. His story is called Omicron Could Widen Blue-Red Economic Divide. All right, so if we knew then what we know now and applied some of 2020 to now, or I mean, are we going to approach things differently with Omicron?
Well, we had all been hoping that this pandemic would be behind us, at which point it just wouldn't be a factor in anybody's thinking, either health or economic-wise, and we would see this divergence between red and blue states disappear. And unfortunately, if Omicron becomes the source of another wave, that's just not going to be true, and we're going to see some of these relationships be perpetuated. Unfortunately, you know, you can see blue leaders, and that includes President Joe Biden, who really, really want to avoid lockdowns again because they're aware of the economic costs that they entail. They'd rather have people just wear masks and get vaccinated. The problem that we're dealing with right now is that this red-blue divide isn't just a function of the policies that governors implement. It's a function of attitudes, which so people are behaving differently, even if the policies are the same. In fact, there's some research to suggest that the personal spontaneous response to the presence of COVID, you know, people who don't want to go shopping or people who don't want to go to the office, is more important than whatever the government decides to do. So the attitudinal change will be with us for a while.
Thanks, Greg. Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at The Wall Street Journal. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Senate lawmakers have voted to approve a bill that funds the government through February 18th, avoiding a government shutdown with about 24 hours to spare, despite a partisan clash regarding President Biden's federal vaccine mandate. Democratic Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia.
It's not a vaccine mandate. It is a vaccine or testing mandate. If you don't want to get a vaccine, don't get a vaccine. Get a test so you can go to work each week without infecting your colleagues with the deadly disease.
The Senate voted 69 to 28 in favor of the continuing resolution, which approves government funding at the prior year's levels until a new bipartisan agreement is reached. The resolution includes $7 billion in new funding to support Afghan refugees.
Number two.
President Biden's planned requirement for incoming international travelers to have a negative COVID test within 24 hours of departing will begin Monday.
This tighter testing timetable provides an added degree of protection as scientists continue to study the Omicron variant.
Biden also announced a campaign to continue encouraging people to get vaccinated and boosters, expanding access to vaccines with more walk-in appointments and longer hours and weekend availability at vaccination sites.
Number three.
The Biden administration says it has struck a deal with the Mexican government to reinstate a Trump-era border policy that forces asylum seekers to stay in that country until their U.S. immigration court date. The program will restart at one border location on Monday and will eventually involve 7 entry points. The first major infusion of federal cash from the bipartisan infrastructure law is on its way to states across the country to overhaul the nation's aging water infrastructure and dangerous lead pipes. The EPA will distribute $7.4 billion to states, tribes, and territories focused on water infrastructure grants and loan forgiveness. The agency says it's the single largest investment in water infrastructure in the history of the federal government. As debate continues about vaccines, there's certainly nothing new. A letter from Catherine the Great, dated April 20th, 1787, in which she supports mass immunization against smallpox, sold for $1.3 million at a London auction this week. In the letter, Catherine instructs a governor general of Ukraine to make immunization of the public a priority, noting that it is more convenient since there are doctors or medical attendants in nearly all districts and it does not call for huge expenditure.
How about that?
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. Thank you, Jen. Coming up next, the trend of sustainable holiday gifts. This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now, there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon. Thanks for being with us. Some children might be waking up on Christmas morning to find more homemade gifts and a lot less wrapping paper under the tree. Lauren Thomas, retail reporter at CNBC, has a look at the trend of sustainability. Lauren, explain.
It's one theme that I think that we can pull out from, you know, a number of data points that we're seeing over the holiday season. But yes, sustainability is something that I think consumers are increasingly conscious of, aware of, and maybe in the past there has been, whether it's a stigma or some hesitancy to think of sustainable gifts, you know, as you know, something that you can give to someone else. But I think increasingly, and it's being driven by the younger consumer largely, there is more of a willingness and acceptance to go out and shop for environmentally friendly options, as gifts to give for others, so not just buying things for yourself. So we're seeing that both on, the types of gifts that people are shopping for, but also how they're giving the gift. So when you think about gift wrap, so I'm going to give you some numbers that really help emphasize this trend that we can put behind it. So 1 in 3 shoppers say that they plan to ditch traditional wrapping paper this holiday season.
Oh, wow.
That's according to an Accenture survey. So 1 in 3, I mean, that's pretty sustainable or significant too, as we think about the sustainable trend, I'm sorry. And so, as alternatives, people are using things like cloth. They're finding, old fabrics. It was another example that was given to me, as a way to wrap a present, and put it in something that can be used again and again. And kind of the idea from one source that I spoke to was it's almost one of those items that you can use, give it to someone else and hope that they'll reuse it and kind of pass it along and keep it in the ecosystem there.
This is not something that I necessarily relate to. Is this a younger consumer thing?
Yeah, for sure. It is. Definitely, I think, being driven by that Gen Z or millennial consumer. You see, as we do these teen surveys or we get, information from teens, that just sustainability, whether it's, climate change that they're more aware of, they're thinking about, and they want to be impactful. I think these younger generations are really more cognizant of their actions and how their actions can be powerful, and again, that they can make an impact. So they're trying to do that and increasingly are doing that through their consumption, and whether it's where they're shopping, some brands really have sustainability, like, it's very aware that this is like an environmentally friendly brand. I mean, Allbirds is one example, right? I think Allbirds has really pitched themselves. They make shoes, and they use like wool that they say is more eco-friendly than some other alternatives that we see in footwear. And so that's really like part of their ethos, right? And I think that they have then really found a group of consumers that love them for that. So I think it's a part of this is just we're seeing more brands in this space giving consumers more sustainable options to choose from.
Thanks, Lauren. Lauren Thomas, retail reporter at CNBC. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. In the last year plus, you may have seen yourself more in video meetings than in the mirror. That beard that looked okay on a webcam, well, it got out of hand, didn't it? So as long as you're resetting your look, reset the way you shave with something better. Harry's. If you don't know about Harry's, it's time to find out. Harry's was founded to be different from the big companies. They wanted to prove you didn't need to decide between a great shave and a fair price, so they give you both. I'm amazed every time at how close my shave is. My blades stay amazingly sharp for days. High quality for a low price. Exactly what they set out to do when they founded Harry's. And I think you'll feel the same way. There's never been a better time to try Harry's. Visit harrys.com/deal to get their starter set for just $3. It's 100% satisfaction guaranteed, so you've got nothing to lose. harrys.com/deal to get this special offer for the starter set. HARRYS. harrys.com/deal.
The top national stories with the context to make sense of it all. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday, December 3. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Congress avoids government shutdown. The Biden administration is tightening travel rules for international arrivals. Some Michigan schools closed over threats of violence. Cowboys over the Saints in Thursday night football. Buccaneers stars Antonio Brown and Mike Edwards suspended 3 games for misrepresenting their vaccination status. Grizzlies beat the Thunder by a record 73 points last night. And the volunteers who helped an ailing Iowa man maintain a Christmas tradition. That story in about 20 minutes. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by Indeed. Is finding seasonal help on your wish list? You need Indeed, the all-in-one platform for interviewing, screening, and hiring high-quality people. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Consumers who try to purchase N95 masks, mainly on Amazon, are often led to vendors selling fake or poorly made KN95s, a Chinese-made mask that's often marketed as an N95 equivalent, despite the lack of testing by U.S. regulators to confirm virus filtering claims. It's a story by Andrew Jacobs, global health reporter at the New York Times. Andy, what have you uncovered?
Well, you know, 18 months into this pandemic, masks are still the single most important tool we have to prevent infection with COVID-19. But bizarrely, most of the masks that are sold in the U.S. or most of the masks that people are buying in the U.S. are actually poor quality Chinese-made masks. And that's partly because of where most people do their shopping, and that is an Amazon. And Amazon is largely favoring Chinese-made imported KN95 masks, which are the sort of comparable to the N95 masks, these virus-filtering masks. A big part of the problem is e-commerce platforms. But there's also sort of a regulatory vacuum here, and that is nobody is really regulating these masks, these imported masks. So it's kind of a wild west out there.
As I'm reading your story, I found myself almost standing with my hands on my hips, my head down, shaking my head in disappointment. Like, what does Amazon say about all this?
Well, Amazon claims they work hard to weed out fakes and counterfeits. But I think it's just maybe a bit of a daunting task. And I think also, part of it is Amazon makes their money. A lot of their money comes from Chinese, made products. So I think this is a big, money earner. And most of the masks that are the top sellers on Amazon are all these Chinese-made KN95s. The problem is that, there are lots and lots of American-made masks available, American-made N95s, which are, actually a better mask. And these companies, these American companies are all, many of them were created during the pandemic in response to China cutting off supplies. If you remember, in the early months of the pandemic, there was a huge crisis in this country. We had no face masks. We had no PPE because China, which makes most of our PPE these days, cut off supplies to keep them for themselves to deal with their own pandemic. So these companies, the American companies, started up, investing their own capital. It was all well and good for a while. But then China got their pandemic under control. Those products began flowing once again into the U.S. And because they're cheaper for a variety of reasons, that's what hospitals have begun buying again, and that's what has sort of flooded these marketplaces, these e-commerce marketplaces, and they're sort of elbowing out the American-made N95, which is, putting these companies at risk of bankruptcy. A lot of them have already stopped making masks. And that's a problem both now and for the future, for the next pandemic. If we don't have domestic capacity to make these products, we're going to find ourselves in the same pickle as we did in March 2020.
Wow. We're speaking with Andrew Jacobs, global health reporter at the New York Times. His story is called Counterfeit COVID Masks Are Still Sold Everywhere Despite Misleading Claims. So I know you said they're poorly made. They don't have FDA approval. Are they actually better than nothing?
I would say, of course, it's better than nothing. But the one caveat there is if it gives you a false sense of security, say you're flying on a plane and you're wearing a mask you think is offering you 95%, because that 95 stands for the percent of pathogens that are filtered out or tiny particles that are filtered out by the mask. So if you really do have an N95, that does that, great. But if you're wearing a mask you think is providing that coverage, but it's not, and say it's only filtering out 30% of particles, which many of these masks do, you could be putting yourself at risk. Though I obviously no mask. Well, you can't really not wear a mask on a plane, for example. You have to wear a mask. Right. But I think in other situations, if you're going to a play, you're going to be in a church, sitting with people who are singing behind you, you want to feel confident that the mask you're wearing is doing its job.
All right. Thanks, Andy. Andrew Jacobs, global health reporter at the New York Times. Coming up next, new LSU coach Brian Kelly suddenly sounds like he's from Louisiana.
Today's mic drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Friday. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it seems like it's been a little while since we've had a blue dress, yellow dress style debate on social media, and this might be the first one we've seen about math. A Twitter user posted a fairly simple math problem for users to solve the other day, and the divide on what the correct answer is proves that numbers definitely aren't our strong suit. The problem reads 2 plus 5 parentheses 8 minus 5. Most of all the answers in the 14,000 comments were either 17 or 21, and people were ready to vigorously defend their answers. One user wrote, "I asked my mom because she taught math for 32 years, and she also got 17. It's 17. Fight me."
Oh, dear.
Another added, "To everyone saying 21, you're going to call Google?" Referencing the fact that even Google's built-in calculator works out with the answer being 17. Those who insisted that the answer must be 21 were clapped back with a healthy dose of PEMDAS, the acronym used by teachers to teach the order of operations in an equation, standing for parentheses, exponents, multiplication, division, addition, subtraction.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, I did it. The first time I did it, I got 21. But again, I'm a radio guy, and we're not good at math. So there you go.
Well, I mean, 21's the right answer.
No. But, no.
Yes. Yes, because you do what's in parentheses first. How is it 17?
It's because you do what's in parentheses first, and then you add the two plus five. You don't do
seven times
three.
It's the five.
It's the five times three first. Yes, then you add the two afterwards.
Whew, correct. Correct.
Oh, see, we almost had to fight.
You forget when the number's inside that parentheses. It's yes. still there.
Yes,
it's still there.
Yes, that's what got me. So that's why I got 21 first as well. But you see how difficult this is for
yes.
us mere mortals, and math's really not a thing we should be attempting.
Listen,
here.
This is one of the main reasons that I loved calculus so much in college.
Uh-huh.
I did it twice.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Well, at least you attempted it. I didn't even go there. And you can't blame Gordon, LSU's new football coach, for wanting to fit in, but he may be trying a little too hard. Brian Kelly, who left Notre Dame for big money in Louisiana, was introduced to LSU fans last night and appears to have already settled into the bayou by adopting a Southern accent.
"It's a great night to be a Tiger. I'm here with my family, and we are so excited to be in the great state of Louisiana, but more importantly, to be with you great fans."
Folks,
Folks
on social media were quick to point out that Kelly, a native of Everett, Massachusetts, has never sported a Southern accent before, even referencing his goodbye speech to Notre Dame players earlier this week where he sounds completely different. Some on Twitter liken the coach's new accent to the much-ridiculed fake Texas accent James Vanderbeek was sporting during the movie Varsity Blues.
Jeez.
Now, I have some experience with this. I moved to Texas for a few years in my 20s, and I have to say, I was there for years, and at no point did I adopt any sort of Texas accent, as far as I know. Now, they told me when I went down there that the first thing that was going to creep in was y'all. They said,
okay,
at some point, you're going to start saying y'all. And I think I might have even dropped in a couple of y'alls to local. If I was talking to locals, I might have dropped in a y'all here and there.
Right.
But otherwise, I think my accent was still pretty Jersey through and through.
Texans and Louisianans pretty much can spot a New Jersey accent,
sure.
Right at the top of anything.
Forget
even
that.
If you weave in the y'alls.
They spotted me walking down the street. I didn't even have to open my mouth. Come on.
Dell Technologies' biggest business sale of the year has arrived. Step up your vision with top tech up to 50% off during their Cyber Monday event. Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business, plus get incredible savings on Windows 11 PCs along with servers, monitors, and docks, all with free shipping. There's also special financing with Dell Business Credit. Get started by contacting your Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Cutting through the clutter to bring you the people and stories that matter to you. You're listening to America's First News, This Morning, with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Money.com is out with its 2021 Best Places to Retire list. Number one, Carmel, Indiana. Money says, don't let its picturesque Main Street and affordable housing fool you. The quaint suburb of Indianapolis is bustling with activity and culture in its own right. Number two, Franklin, Tennessee, a regular on the list, 30 minutes from Nashville.
a historic district, and a wide array of boutiques, cafes, and tap houses. Homes getting pricey, though. $565,000 is the median. Number three, Boca Raton, Florida. Number four, Lower Merion, Pennsylvania. Number five is Liberty, Missouri. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
The Senate passed a short-term government funding bill last night, sending it to President Biden's desk a day before a Friday deadline to prevent a shutdown. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
I thank the members of this chamber for walking us back from the brink of an avoidable, needless, and costly shutdown.
The Senate passed the bill after Democratic and Republican leaders tamped down efforts within the GOP to delay it. A handful of Republican senators threatened to hold up the measure in an effort to bar a Biden administration COVID vaccine mandate on private employers. The legislation will keep the government running through February 18th.
Number two.
Tighter travel rules, free at-home tests, and booster shots are key elements of President Biden's latest strategy to combat the rapidly evolving coronavirus. Biden says his plan to get through the winter months is one that all Americans hopefully can rally around.
America's doing our part, and we'll do more. But this is a global pandemic, and everyone needs to fight it together. And that includes countries we're helping that aren't particularly friendly toward us. Their populations are in trouble.
Number three.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says the Omicron variant could pose a significant risk to the global economy's ongoing recovery from the pandemic. In an interview with Reuters, Yellen notes the variant's economic impact is still very uncertain, but its spread could exacerbate supply chain issues. The House panel investigating the deadly invasion of the U.S. Capitol aims to hold lengthy public hearings next year detailing in, quote, vivid color the events of January 6th, both at the Capitol and in the White House. Liz Cheney of Wyoming, the vice chair of the Select Committee and one of its two Republican members, says the panel will conduct multiple weeks of public hearings sometime in 2022. Here's some good news resulting from the tight labor market. Corporate layoffs are at their lowest level in nearly 30 years. Outplacement firm Challenger Gray and Christmas says about 14,900 corporate jobs were cut in November, the lowest figure since May of 1993. Government figures also show unemployment claims, a proxy for layoffs, have been falling steadily.
Fingers crossed that we maintain that trend. Thank you, Jen. Coming up next, volunteers to the Christmas rescue in Iowa. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy. Thanks for being with us. Every year, a neighborhood in Des Moines, Iowa becomes engulfed in lights and decorations, turning into a Christmas wonderland. It draws crowds from all over. It's been a tradition in the Beaverdale neighborhood for years. Julie Marks and husband Dale Marks have also used the event as a way to collect food and donations for the Food Bank of Iowa. But when Dale Marks, who survived COVID, two strokes, and a heart attack, was unable to decorate this year, a local contractor rushed in to help. Now, Dale Marks is out of the hospital, but he uses an oxygen tank and can only walk short distances inside their home, making it difficult to keep up their Christmas tradition. So after hearing about their story, Bob Coffey, who owns the construction company Bob the Builder LLC, and a handful of his employees stepped in. Mr. Coffey and four of his workers visited the Marks' home and spent 3 hours putting up around 10,000 lights and decorations throughout the yard. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.